Judiciary is coming together. We're 15 minutes tardy today, but we can afford that because we have just a matter of housekeeping we'll get to in a bit and explain that. We have with us today Representative Millett, Representative Gruenberg, Representative Pruitt, Representative Foster, Representative Ledoux, and Representative Lynn, and myself, Representative Keller, full house, so ready to go. HB 140 was scheduled for today. There's some details that had to be ironed out on that, so we're not going to hear that today. And we'll bring them back hopefully on Wednesday, and we'll shoot for a clean CS and try to get that out before to all the members before the meetings to make it as smooth as we possibly can. So before we get started, Representative Lynn, did you have something you wanted to share with us?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we've all seen in the news the United States Supreme Court has some important case they're going to decide or at least hear arguments on next week. And so I asked my staff to inquire of our Attorney General if we'd file any kind of an amicus brief on the question of the same-sex marriage, et cetera. And I got an email back and said, I found out we joined the amicus brief of Indiana arguing that the Defense of Marriage Act does not violate equal protection in United States versus Windsor, and join the brief of Indiana and Virginia arguing that California's Proposition 8 does not violate the 14th Amendment in Hollingsworth v. Perry. And so the brief that Alaska joined opposed the arguments that there is a constitutional right to same-sex marriage. I thought that'd be good to put on the record. So we are joined with Indiana and several other states. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lynn. So where we're at with we're going to go right to HB 73, and where we're at is we have gone through a description of the changes there that show the comparison with where we were before and the Senate version, which is also in action. We have online today Quinlan Steiner from the Public Defender Agency for there to answer questions, and Ron Taylor from the Department of Corrections. But we're going to go directly to the committee for discussion or whatever on the bill. Is there any comment? Representative Ledoux.
Okay. I move amendment number one, which reads 28-GH1587/U.3. And what that's supposed to do is clear up the...
I'll object for purposes of...
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Thank you. Okay. What that's supposed to do is clear up the problem which was mentioned by Mr. Quinton Steiner? Is that?
Yeah, Quinton Steiner.
The other day, in which... we would not be able to replicate materials to send them to in-state experts, only if they're being sent to out-of-state experts. So, in other words, if the material is in Nome, but the expert is in Anchorage, the expert under the bill as it stands now would have to come to Nome to look at the materials, which means bringing up his lab to Nome, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which could become a very costly proceeding to do that. So in order to avoid that, the defendant would have to send the material out of state to an out-of-state expert, where it would be replicated, I guess, in Nome, and then send it to an out-of-state expert. And it just doesn't, to me, I thought Mr. Steiner had a very good point, that it really didn't make sense if you could replicate materials and send them out-of-state, why you shouldn't be able to replicate them and send them in-state to the in-state expert. I mean, why we want people coming from California and Colorado and every place else and sending it out to them, but we wouldn't send something to Anchorage or Juneau. So I thought he had a good point, so I made the amendment.
Okay, we're going to call this one amendment number one.
Yes.
And it's labeled U.3 in your paperwork. Does anybody not have it? And just to check me, we're on page 20, line 18. And it strikes out toward the end there everything, the defendant's attorney and any individual on 19, all of 19, and up through the after the period there after trial. And it inserts instead defendant's attorney. And then on page 20 also, then line 23, it deletes outside the state. Any questions for the maker of the amendment? No comments? Okay, I withdraw my objection. Does anyone have? Okay, amendment number one carries.
Oh, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Grunberg.
I would ask that I be added as a co-sponsor. I forgot for that as the last amendment.
I think we all are, with no objection.
Okay.
Go ahead and refer it.
Okay.
It's a little bit cleaner. We'll go with U.1. Yeah, I'm not going to argue.
Okay, Mr.
But
Chair.
I would be a co-sponsor on it. Put my name all over that.
Well, I think we have consensus on an amendment. Representative Grunberg, would you like to tell us what it is?
Right. Okay, let's call the U.1 amendment number two.
You move amendment number two. I object for purposes of causing discussion.
And this is offered on behalf of myself, Representative Ledoux, Representative Pruitt, and Representative Millett, the
and
four of us.
Okay.
You want in on this action?
Let me.
I've heard of committee bills, but I haven't heard of committee amendment.
Hey, we're on U.1. Everybody has it in front of you, and it's on page 19. And Representative Grunberg, do you want
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I preliminarily believe this will be offered in place of the Pruitt Amendment.
Yes.
So I'm going to put not offered on that. Now, what this amendment does, Mr. Chair, is it deals with on pages 19 and 20. It deletes the coverage for volunteer coaches, and it only covers paid coaches. And so it deletes the language on page 19, lines 4 and 5, it deletes page 19, line 22 to 31, which defines the unpaid volunteers, creates exceptions, it explicitly states on page 20, line 2, that it only includes paid leaders or assistant of a sports team, public or private. Leader is, I think, broader than coach. It's anybody who's an administrator dealing with the teams. With that, I would ask anybody who wants to add or change anything I've said so that the language is clear.
There's one more change, and that is, and I'd like you to explain that, if you would, give us on the bottom there, lines 18, 19, and 20?
18, 19, I'm sorry.
On your amendment, on U.1, you've got...
Oh, yeah, that's just a conforming thing. See, we've deleted on page 19, section 37. So that means everybody else is going to have to be renumbered. But on page 22, line 29, there is a specific reference to Section 43. And now, because 37 has gone, this is Section 42.
Thank you. Believe it or not, I was confused.
That's all right.
Can happen.
All right.
No, thank you. That's on the record. That's what we wanted. Good.
The only question that's out of order is one that's not asked.
Representative Gruenberg, thank you.
Sure.
Is there any comments or discussion on Amendment number 2?
Same
thing. Seeing none, I will remove my objection to Amendment number 2. And I don't see any further objections, so we're in good shape. Any more discussion on or amendments, either one to HB 73?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gruenberg.
I have one amendment that's been distributed and another that I haven't received yet, but I'm not, if it's okay with the Chair, I'm not going to talk about that yet. I have an amendment that is labeled A1, and this was prepared. I'm going to move A1 if somebody can
object. Object. Okay. Thank you.
Object very loud.
Yeah. too loud.
I have stereo here.
We have
lamps. Yeah. You and everybody else.
Okay, there's been an objection, Representative Gruenberg. We'll try to clean up the process here so it's not quite so difficult for the recorder. So, one at a time, if you would, through the chair. Go ahead, Representative Gruenberg.
Mr. Chair. This is an A1, and the pages are blank because at the time I wasn't sure which version we were going to be using, the previous version or this version or maybe even the Senate version coming over. But it is offered to CSHB 73 Judiciary Work Order 28 GS GH 1587/U. And the first part of it is part of the title amendment. And the drafter will just have to put it in the appropriate place in the title. And that's why I'd like this labeled as conceptual amendment number 3.
Would you like to speak to your objection, Representative?
If I may continue.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Gruenberg, go ahead.
Okay. The members can see attached to the amendment are two things. Number one is a discussion of what the amendment does, and number two is a research paper talking about the historical need for the amendment. What the amendment does is it deals with a section in the adoption code that is relevant to some of the is also related to the sexual assaults and things like that that we're dealing with in the bill. Right now, under the section 180, 2523-180, if you want to terminate a parent's rights, you can do it in three ways. In conjunction with an adoption, as part of a child in need of aid case, or as a standalone lawsuit. And this emanated from a case that is discussed in the Strassbaum memo, SJ versus LT, which came out while I was served in the 1980s and was a notorious case. They were not able to terminate a sexual assaulter's rights because there wasn't an adoption and there was no taking the child away from the mom. And there just wasn't a statutory means to do this when the man had raped the woman. I think it was actually a minor. The victim was a child at the time, a minor. And the Supreme Court rendered that decision at or shortly before the legislature convened. It was an unusual factual pattern. And the case was on a remand, which meant that it was on its way back to the Superior Court. And Senator Paul, I think his name is Johnson, who was the senator from Kenai, was very concerned and brought this bill forward. And it was on a fast track. and they passed the bill very quickly. And in the course of the bill, in this, it was in the Hess committee, then it went to this committee. There was a dialogue between myself and the then Commissioner of Health and Human Services, Myra Munson. And the bill was, Section I, was drafted as you see it here without this amendment. And I said, why is this limited to sexual abuse of a minor? And she said, we want to get the bill through quickly, and there may be more controversy. She didn't, I don't think, explain what she meant. Didn't want to hold it up because of the urgency in this. This statute, subsection I, is a standalone section. And what it means is if you terminate the person's parental rights because of sexual assault, that doesn't deny the victim or the parent of the victim the right to seek injunctive relief, that's equitable relief, or money damages. It's called a savings statute. It saves these other remedies. And it allows that person, for example, to go after money damages, costs, and get injunctions, domestic violence relief, and various things that are just fair. And in all these years, they have never gone back and sought to amend the statute the way it frankly should have been done when we did this all these years ago. And I just came across this, and I think it's important that we fill this in.
Well, okay. The objection, let's start with the one who made the objection to the amendment, Representative Mellott, and then we'll go to you.
I just was wondering if we could get Annie Carpinetti up here to talk about how this affects the bill.
Okay. And you, if you would, come up. And Representative Ledoux, did you have
a question? Since this is a proceeding for the termination of parental rights that we're talking about, wouldn't any sexual abuse be sexual? Wouldn't any sexual assault fall under sexual abuse of a minor?
Vice versa. Any sexual abuse of a minor falls under sexual. I'm sorry.
Well, just for the,
I'm sorry.
Keep a little bit of decorum, okay? So,
Sexual abuse of a minor is one type of sexual abuse. And that's correct. And when I talked to Ms. Strasbaugh, I said, why not just delete of a minor? Because that would include all kinds of sexual abuses. But she felt it was better to do it the way she did it.
Through the chair.
Representative Ledoux.
I'm still really confused because, I mean, it's a proceeding for a termination of parental rights. So where would there be a situation, give me a situation that wouldn't be included if this is not amended, and how things would change if it were amended, okay?
Sure.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah. Okay. The only person type of category, if the bill is not amended, two types of people only could bring their injunctive relief and damages. And those are people who were the victims of sexual abuse of a minor or the victim of incest. So if you were an adult who was raped and bore the child, their rights are not saved under this language. That's what I want to include, people who were adult victims.
Representative Grunberg, a question for you. Is this not covered in Section 2 of HB 73 already, when we have removed the statute of limitations, you know, for sexual assault cases? I don't understand why. I just don't see that this is on target. And I also want to read into the record Kathleen Strassball's comment on why she did not include the of a minor. I did not eliminate the phrase of a minor because the term sexual abuse of a minor is a defined term, and then that's in 2523-140. Instead, I added sexual assault, quote unquote, which is also a defined term.
So I'm sorry, yes.
I just wanted to make it clear.
Yeah. Representative Grunberg, did you, well, I asked a question first. Representative, let you respond.
This ASO 9.10.065 is a different kind of a statute. It's what's called a statute of limitations. It doesn't give somebody the right to bring an action. It simply says that you can bring an action for felony sex trafficking, civil action, or felony human trafficking at any time. It removes the normal two-year statute of limitations, but it doesn't provide a cause of action.
And assuming the Department of Law will want to comment on that, I will represent Millett and then Representative LaDuke.
So if I understand what you're doing, you're adding sexual assault and you're also adding a method for civil remedies.
For people who were adult victims.
For adult victims.
Yes, ma'am.
So those are the two main portions of this that you're doing. One, you're adding sexual assault of an adult.
And that's all.
And then adding the being able to sue for civil remedies.
It's one thing. If you were a minor.
Sorry, through the chair. Sorry.
If I may, through the chair.
Representative Grunberg.
If you were a minor and sexually assaulted or a victim of incest, under the previous law, the current law, you can sue. This says if you were an adult when you were sexually assaulted, you can do the same.
Can't they already sue? I don't understand isn't this already in statute?
I want to, if I could add to that before you respond, again, the drafter of the amendment says it does not appear to me that the termination of parental rights to a child conceived is in an illegal relationship would in any way affect the claim of the victim of sexual abuse or incest might have against the perpetrator. That's on page 2, third paragraph. So her question is the same as yours.
Okay. Do you want me to answer or take
her? Sure.
Okay. Yeah. There is something called the Tort Claims Act in Title 9.65 that is the normal statute that you use when you sue the state. This is a special statute that was enacted to deal with these classes of victims and this whole thing. And it could be argued that maybe it would fall under the Tort Claims Act or maybe not. But the courts usually try to give effect to any legislative enactment. And since this deals with this specific factual pattern, it could have been argued that only people who were minors when they were sexually abused are covered, and adult victims are not. I don't want to have there be any question, because it's really important these people can get injunctive relief and that they can go after damages if they need to.
Representative Little, just a second, but I want to point out that the way you just described it, I'm not sure it's germane to the HB 73, and that it may be a very worthy topic for another bill, a separate bill. But Representative Little?
What? I don't get it. What are we talking about, the Tort Claims Act and suing the state? If somebody...
I'm sorry, I guess that's wrong.
Representative Greenberg, right. Did you have a response?
Yeah, I was wrong on that. It's not a suit against the state.
Okay, can I follow up? I mean, so you're telling me that without this statute, this change, that nobody can sue for sexual assault? That runs counterintuitive to everything that I know about torts. Not that I know all that much, but I mean, that was what I did for a living.
Through the chair.
Representative Grunberg.
This statute, I don't think was intent. I mean, it was It was a statute that was rushed through. And I don't want there to be any question about whether somebody who wasn't an adult, who wasn't a child, could sue or wasn't a victim of incest. They would say, why would the legislature have drafted this? I don't think that was the intent, but it's a strangely drafted statute, and I don't see why we don't eliminate all question and just put this in there. And as far as whether it's within the rest of the bill, there's stuff in here that isn't just criminal. There's stuff in here that deals with, my recollection is of Title 47, and sexual abuse and things are in here. I do not believe with this broad a subject matter that they would strike this thing down. And it certainly increases the remedies that are available to victims, and is not going to do any harm.
Representative Millett.
Thank you, Chairman Keller. I object to this because I don't believe it belongs in this bill. And I think your intention is good, but I think it's a bill that should be a standalone bill. And I think if you read back through your legal opinion, that was our same concern.
Kathleen.
So I think that, one of her statements is, thus it's not clear what additional effect the existing statute or the amendment might have, and that gives me great pause to think that this is not the appropriate place for this amendment in this crime bill. But I would definitely like to hear from Mrs. Carpenetti.
Andy, if you would identify yourself for the record, and you can answer Representative Millett's question.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I find myself unable to give you an answer to that question. I looked at for 2 minutes before I came over to this hearing, I looked at the law in Title 25. I am no expert in adoption law, and I don't think I can be very helpful to you. When I looked at the law, I thought, well, I guess I don't have a problem with this. I don't understand it as well as I would like to speak on it. So if I had some time, a couple hours, I would go back to my office and read the case and read the law around it and have some information that might be helpful. But I cannot give it to you now. Sorry.
Follow up, Representative Millett.
I guess what I'm asking you is, does it fall within the subject matter of the bill? I just don't think it pertains to what the intent of this legislation is doing.
Through the chair, Representative Millett, it deals with sexual assault and lawsuits based on sexual assault, so it's tangentially relevant. We have in the bill changes in Title 47 that deal with sexual assault and abuse. In a sense, it does. It's not central to the. It's not a criminal law, and the bill is essentially a criminal law. Can I be any more wishy-washy? Sorry.
Representative Ledoux.
So would this only apply where an adult had somebody's raped, and they're an adult, and then their parental rights of the rape victim are terminated? Because why would you be terminating adult? I don't get it. I mean, I just don't get this.
Representative Grunberg.
Okay. What this is talking about are not the rights of the perpetrator, but the rights of the victim.
Through the chair, I understand that.
May I ask what you don't understand?
Everything else. I'm sorry. I'm just really
interested. This is about civil penalties. This is about being able to sue as a sexual assault victim as an adult.
That is true.
Okay, that's why I'm saying that this doesn't fit in what we're doing with child abuse and neglect and sexual assault of a minor. This is a single subject of an adult having the right to sue as an adult when they've been sexually assaulted, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. That's all this amendment does, from what I can see, and I still hold my objection. It does not, the civil ability to sue as an adult does not have a place in this bill, is all I'm saying, Mr. Chairman.
We'll let you respond, but I would like to Representative Pruitt, and my intent here is to end the agony of the committee by calling for a vote here as soon as I can get.
I think there won't be much agony.
Representative Pruitt.
What I'm not clear about yet is what rights does the perpetrator have towards a child? So the victim obviously is the parent and has that legal right. What right potentially does the perpetrator have in relationship with that child? Can anyone answer that?
Well, that's a great one for the Department of Law.
I could answer that.
If you would, Amy.
What rights, through the chair, what rights does the perpetrator of the sexual assault on the adult victim who he impregnated to that child that...
Yeah, so actually there's probably two questions there. What right do they have related to the victim? What right do they have to the child and the parental right of that child for which they were the perpetrator of this act?
Through the chair, I would have to have some time to figure that out. I can't answer that on the fly. I would not want to do that.
And I appreciate that. The reason I ask is because I'm trying to understand and put all the pieces together, and it almost seems like what we're changing here, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because I think I'm understanding where you're going. I want to make sure that I fully grasp it, is that they in the situation where an individual who is the victim, they can sue for... essentially, it sounds like they can sue to make sure that they are the only parent legally. Is that what I'm getting? Is that what I'm understanding?
No.
Okay. Go ahead and clarify.
To paraphrase Alfred P. Doolittle, My Fair Lady, I'm willing to answer. I'm wanting to answer. I'm waiting to answer.
Representative Gruber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, before any action is taken to terminate the perpetrator's rights, the perpetrator would have full legal rights, equal right to parent the child,
okay,
to seek custody, and an concurrent obligation to pay child support. Once their rights are terminated, they have no further right to custody or visitation, and no further obligation to pay support.
Can I ask a question?
Representative Pruitt.
So to eliminate that right, the victim would have to sue to be the sole parent of the child.
It's called terminating the other parent's...
Robert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's called terminating the other parent's parental rights.
So, continuation.
Yeah,
so, if I understand this, because the proceedings for the termination of parental rights on the ground set forward with C3, which I think C3 is addressing that piece of this particular section, do not affect the rights of a victim to obtain legal. So, it almost sounds like there's nothing that can take place in that initial lawsuit of gaining the parental right of the victim that can forego their right later on to sue for some sort of civil or whatever damages that they believe they can get because of the actual act that took place. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yes. What through the chair. When this bill was enacted in 1987, Chapter 50 dealt with a whole number of statutes to deal with this one case. And the main thrust of that legislation was to allow a separate cause of action for the parent who was the victim to terminate the other parent's rights. And it wouldn't have to be by the state of Alaska under Title 47. And it wouldn't have to be in conjunction with an adoption, because in that case, nobody else was seeking to become an adoptive parent. This statute was, I think, enacted out of caution, simply to ensure that the victim could still seek any other injunctive relief to keep the guy away, or any relief for money damages. And it simply said, you have the right to bring either of those actions. They're not, your rights are not extinguished by the termination of the other person's parental rights.
So the fact that they're no longer legally a parent does not prevent you from saying you still cannot get near me, whether it's an injunction of, you know, get away from us, and even though you're not the parent of this child legally, I still have the right to come seek out damages monetarily for the pain and hardship that you have caused both me and potentially this child by putting me into a single parent situation.
Medical expense, through the chair, medical expenses and that sort of thing. It's basically a fairly benign statute. It's just to ensure these people are protected.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Pruitt.
I think there's, from what I understand, it sounds like there's definitely validity to what you're saying. I think the concern that we probably should be discussing here is whether or not this truly does fit in this bill, or if we should run it separately. Because I think, now that I fully understand what you're saying, there's no reason why, just because you've turned 18 and happen to have been raped, that by terminating the parental right of the perpetrator, you should not have the ability afterwards to still say the injunction or the monetary basically damages from the action that took place.
That is correct. That is correct. Let me make a suggestion, since I don't know if that answers most of the other questions. Could we get Doug Gardner or somebody on the phone from Ledge Legal?
No, Representative Grunberg, I'm going to suggest that we have a vote, but it's not in disrespect to your concept here, but it does introduce, obviously confusion and a new concept, because it's gone from the way your amendment there was written with the child in mind. This expands it, you know, at some confusing level, confusing to some, including the person that wrote the legal memo. It wasn't Doug, it was
Kathleen.
And so the reason I'm going to ask for a vote on it is that I just don't think we need this in the bill. We got a good bill going here, and I think the amount of work and the issue is broad enough that it's more germane to another bill. Representative Lynn?
If we were to pass this amendment, what potential harm would it do to the overall bill? Is there harm to do it or not to do it? It sounds like it may not fit as some of us would like it to fit within this bill. This is basically a criminal bill. But if it were to go in there, what harm could it cause? And to Representative Grunberg or anybody else on the committee?
I'll make a stab at it. I think the harm is unpredictable because of the confusion. I mean, I think there's some confusion here that I think you have found that maybe needs to be addressed for sure in another bill. But Representative Ledoux.
Well, I still don't understand it. So here's my question. Does this go to another committee of referral?
Is it?
No, finance.
It goes to finance. So, I mean, when it comes for a vote, I'm not going to vote for something that I don't understand, but if somebody could explain it to me afterwards, because maybe we could, and it's a good idea. I mean, maybe it can be put in finance, but I just don't feel that I'm at a point right now that I really understand this, so.
Yeah, I think it's premature for sure to pass, but Representative Foster, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to ignore you. I missed your hand.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to say I've gone back and forth, I think, as a lot of you have on this, but I think Representative Pruitt's delving into the matter here has convinced me that I think it is you know, the tangential aspect of this, I think, is such that I think it is substantive, and I think it pertains, and so I think I'm leaning towards supporting it. So,
thank you. Representative Gruber.
This is something I felt deeply about since I came across this statute, and I had no independent recollection of our dialogue on that committee. I have no desire to cause a problem for the chair. Let me ask a question for you.
Okay. That's what Representative Grunberg, that's what committee members do, right?
Cause problems?
Representative Grunberg, go ahead.
I have another amendment that's being drafted, and I don't think it's going to... Oh, it did get here? Oh. I guess it just got here. What I was going to say is if the bill was going to be held over till Wednesday, possibly we could get some information from Ledge Legal and talk to Representative Ledoux and see if this could be worked out. If you want to get this out today, I won't have the time to do that. I have the greatest affection and respect for the chair, and I think it's a good amendment. We could always remove it in finance or whatever if there's a problem. On the other hand, I don't want to roll the chair.
Representative Gruber.
That's not my intent.
Just for what it's worth, there is no critical reason why we have to move this bill today. The Senate version of the bill isn't going to be heard until Thursday. But I would like to move it on Wednesday in this committee if we aren't going to move it today. I don't have any trouble with that, but if that's the case, I would ask you to withdraw your amendment, so we can start over with this discussion.
Oh, sure.
Maybe with a clean legal memo,
sure.
Because obviously there's confusion that goes outside of this committee on this.
Absolutely.
And,
I'm happy to do that, and I'll withdraw the amendment. And I haven't seen this other thing. I would prefer to be able to look at it before I lay it on the table. So can we take this up on Wednesday?
What a great idea.
Representative Grunberg, that's a great idea. But if you remember, the request was that we had all the amendments in before this meeting so that we could have them to discuss. Now we've got an amendment that none of us have seen.
If I could have 5 minutes to
that could be as confusing as the one that we just passed. Representative Millett, and the Department of Law has a comment.
Yeah, I'm uncomfortable until Department of Law looks at both of the amendments. I, from what this legal opinion from our legal services has said, that this amendment, although well-intended, and I understand it, it's a civil action, not a criminal action, although it relates to what we're talking about, germane to the bill, I believe from what I read from Kathleen, that she had trouble putting it in this bill, because it is about suing for civil penalties as an adult, and I guess what I'm questioning is wouldn't someone who's an adult who has a child from a sexual assault already have the ability to sue for damages? And that's something I would like the Department of Law to answer for me, because I cannot imagine that we have neglected that part of the law in our statutes that say a victim who bears a child from a sexual assault and terminates parental rights does not have the ability to sue.
Through the chair, I believe they would have the ability to sue. I think that this amendment is a savings clause that just says if they sue in one respect, terminating the rights of the defendant to the child, they are not losing their rights to pursue other remedies. I believe that's what the bill says, that the amendment says.
Mm-hmm.
So it a savings clause just saves a remedy in case there's confusion about whether or not it can be brought in addition to another remedy. And in this case, it's termination of parental rights. But I do believe a person does have a right to bring a civil action for sexual assault.
I might add that that agrees with the legal drafter of the amendment.
Yeah. I was just going to add, so it's almost, it's really more of a clarification, if I understand it correct. You should not be, it should not affect a claim that the victim of sexual or sexual abuse or incest might have against the perpetrator, according to, and I'm just reading what our legal director had. But we're just trying to make sure that it's clear as, so that no one can come back and say and or argue in some way that it does impact any future claim on the perpetrator. Is that kind of what it is?
Through the chair, that's my understanding. And imperfect as it is, that's my understanding. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. It's withdrawn. And we're not going to, are you going to introduce another amendment? Does anyone, first of all, does anyone else have any other amendments or points of discussion that we can talk about as long as we're not going to move the bill today? You know, Representative Grunberg.
I had prepared another amendment, and Doug Gardner has then drafted it with a memorandum. I would like to offer. Let me tell you conceptually what I want to do.
No, Representative Grunberg, we'll just pass it out if it's okay, and then well, that way we'll get the concept right from reading Doug Gardner's memo. Or do you think that there's things that we won't understand?
It references a previous memo that's not with this, and I think this will be more confusing.
Okay,
I'm sorry. I don't. I will not offer any other amendments.
Okay, go ahead.
You have my word on that.
Go ahead.
I would prefer.
Explain it, if you would, conceptually, then.
All right. The current statute.
Do you have a copy of
it? Wait a second. Representative Leduc.
Can I have a copy of it so I can see it? Well,
we'll take it that easier until we all get a copy.
We've got a bunch of.
What we're going to do is continue on. Representative Grunberg is going to explain a conceptual amendment and.
You want it labeled?
No. We don't want to. We aren't proposing it because you said it, number one, it did it differently than what you thought, and none of us are.
Sure.
But okay. Well, but do you want to explain conceptually what you're trying to do? That's what I'm saying.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Okay, if I may. This amendment is designed to get at activity that occurs outside the state, but has an effect in the state. It is clear jurisdictionally that if somebody in the state does a criminal act, the state has subject matter jurisdiction to prosecute the crime. If somebody does the criminal act outside the state, the general rule is, and we'll ask Ms. Carpinetti if she say anything if she wishes. If it has an effect in the state can exert jurisdiction. And so, what I'm trying to do here is in this one statute, which sometimes involves interstate trafficking and sometimes involves international trafficking, to be able to prosecute somebody who never sets foot in Alaska, but traffics in Alaska. Now, what we've done here, and this is an interesting approach that Doug has done here, we've eliminated the phrase in the state from the statute. And we've got a purposes section that says we are asserting our jurisdiction to the maximum extent constitutionally permissible. This is based upon a unique and, I think, a landmark statute that the California legislature passed, I think in the 1960s, it was while I was in law school or even before, that asserts jurisdiction, quote, in civil cases, to the maximum extent constitutionally permissible. Our jurisdiction statute in Title IX lists various things, but the Jones, J-O-N-Z case says that that statute has been interpreted by the Alaska Supreme Court to allow civil jurisdiction to the maximum extent constitutionally permissible. And we have, by judicial decision, adopted the California approach civilly. And for some time now, we have been interested in my office in seeing what we could do criminally to do the same thing. I'm going to continue to look at that. But at least in this area of horrible human trafficking, I'd like to see us do that. And it's based upon a case called Wheat versus the State that's cited here, and we can give that out to you. As a matter of fact, if you'd make copies and give... Oh. Okay, here, take it. He's going to give you copies. The Wheat case was a very interesting case. In the Wheat case, it was custodial interference. Family, parents divorced in Alaska. Mom got the kid. Father moved to Arizona, refused to return the child. And they hit him for custodial interference in the second degree. He said, no jurisdiction because I kept the child in Arizona. The Court of Appeals unanimously affirmed the conviction and said, because it has an effect in Alaska, the mom's deprived of custody, there's jurisdiction in this state. And this does exactly the same thing in human trafficking. I want to be very, very careful that we do this right. And with the chair's permission, I would like to offer this at the beginning of the next session. And this is the first step, I hope, to revolutionizing our jurisdiction in this state. Prosecution may or may not ever want to do it, but they'll have the tool to do it.
I think this is the first time that I have agreed with Max Groenberg because it has a criminal element to it, because it does fit in the crime bill. I think it's a great amendment, but I think we should get it right. I think you're absolutely right.
I agree.
Yeah, I think it's a great. I think we've all talked about this amongst ourselves. So.
I would really request that you ask the drafter of the amendment, if Representative Groenberg, if you're going to be working on this. You said that you're not real sure that Doug has got what you want, and you want to look at this further. So if you would, get it drafted the way you like, and ask the drafter, our drafter, to be available for questions.
Yes, sir.
Next time early on.
Yes,
and
sir.
I also would really appreciate it if you keep the Department of Law in the loop,
yes,
you know, so that
absolutely
they know exactly what's going on. So if they have a problem with it, they can tell us at the same time without waiting for the next meeting. So.
And I apologize. This will be my last amendment on this thing.
You got
never.
That's on the record. Oof. No, I have a couple. This we're here to make this bill, you know, perfect. So I just want to make sure that there aren't other things that we're missing that we haven't fully discussed that may come up and get it. So be thinking about that, all of you. Like, for example, you know, I think it's a big step what's done in Section 2, where we have in fact eliminated the statute of limitations. I think that's huge, and I find myself going, you know, being pulled both directions on that. You know, I'm willing to go with it, but the only reason I bring that up is, if you have, don't come up with an amendment on Wednesday if you're going to change that. I'm speaking to myself as well as you. You know, don't wait. You know, I mean, that's
a civil statute of limitations.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. I know it. I knew that when I.
Yeah.
I knew that. That's part of the confusion. yes. And then. Oh, Gabrielle. I'm sorry.
Can
the representative will do.
To Representative Groenberg. So, how do you nab the person who's outside of Alaska in order to prosecute them, particularly if, I mean, not every place has a extradition treaty. Suppose the person's actually in Thailand. I don't know whether Thailand has an extradition treaty or not, but practically, how do you get this person?
What? I'm going to defer on that. I think we should hear from the Department of Law. I can tell you what I think. Could, Mr. Chair, could we ask Ms. Carpinetti to come up?
Shouldn't have left.
Chair, this is really an interesting topic, and we don't, just for a little bit of history, back in the early part of the early 2000s, there was a rape on a ferry, state ferry, that occurred in outside of Alaska waters. Mm-hmm. And the Superior Court judge here in Juneau said we didn't have jurisdiction and suggested a legislative change, which we did. It's, there's a provision in our statutes now that specifically provide for jurisdiction of, for criminal laws of our state for offenses committed on Alaska state ferries. That case was appealed, and ultimately our state court decided under the Wheat decision that we had jurisdiction anyway, so we didn't really need that amendment, but we have it, and it's clear now. So this is a topic of interest. The concern that we had at that time when we were amending the provision about jurisdiction on Alaska state ferries is there was consideration similar to yours, Representative Grunberg, through the chair, about extending the jurisdiction. And the concern of the state of Alaska, of the prosecution, was we didn't want to raise expectations that couldn't be met. And we didn't know whether we would be able to find somebody in another state and bring them up, and whether people, victims, would expect that, and whether we could afford it, and what the circumstances were. So that was a concern that we had then, and that's why we just made it specific to Alaska state ferries, acts on Alaska state ferries. This is the Wheat decision. Yeah. But it is a very interesting area of criminal law, and I'd be happy to work with you. You said maybe next session you'd be introducing a bill, or are you going to next session in this?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg?
The only thing I'm doing at this point is this. I would love, if the chair is interested, to see potentially working on that on the interim. It's extremely important, and again, this only gives you the right to do it, the legal basis for doing it, and the budgetary consideration. As I understand it, if somebody is wanted for a crime and they're out of the state, you get a warrant for their arrest and you send it to the attorney general or whoever in the other state, and they domesticate it and arrest the person, and they have an extradition hearing, and that
yes,
determines to bring them back.
They're in another state. We make the decision based on a variety of things, how serious the crime was, how important it is to spend
yes.
the money to bring that person back to be tried in our state. So there are other considerations besides the fact that the person was charged with that crime or even convicted.
Representative Ledoux?
My question actually went not to somebody that you're trying to extradite from Arizona or California or another of the 50 states, but I'm thinking about human trafficking, that it may actually be like Thailand or the Philippines or something like that. How would you get somebody that's there?
Through the chair, I assume that we would have to have some sort of agreement with that country, and that I'd have to do some research to let you know. I would say there is a sex trafficking in the second degree prohibits sex, promoting sex travel. So it does prohibit, and it's a Class B felony for a person to promote travel, acting in our state to promote travel, for example, to Thailand or some other country for the purpose of sexual conduct in that country. It's 1166-2.
Yeah, I wanted to step right back. If there was some sort of extradition requirement from out of the country, does it have to be a federal case to allow that, or as a state, are we allowed to request extradition from another country? Let's say that we were to end up with something like this. Do we have the authority, or would we have to ask the federal government to step in? Would it become legal proceedings in that sense?
Through the chair, my recollection, and I will double-check this, is that we work through the federal government, but that's how I remember.
Representative Grunberg.
In the field of family law, these cases, like the Wheat case, sometimes involve other countries. There's something called the Hague Convention for the Abduction of Children. And my recollection, although I never had a Hague case personally, is you request from the Department of State their assistance and you go, and many, many countries are signatories to the Hague Convention. People sometimes go to non-signatories where you can't get them back. And we have extradition treaties with a lot of, I think most countries, particularly the developed countries we do, but they can go physically, somebody could conduct the crime, in this case sex trafficking or abduction, and go to Mali or someplace where maybe they don't have an extradition treaty with us. And then you can't do anything. But if the person takes a trip and drops off in Brussels, they can arrest them at the airport. I once had a case where somebody kidnapped a child, parent took a child, on a plane to Seattle. And I learned about it when they were in the air. And I got a judge to issue an oral warrant, and the Port of Seattle police were there to arrest the guy and send the kid back when they landed. So it works.
Well, I want to compliment Representative Johnson.
Well, I was just going to ask, if we can make sure in this discussion as we're developing it, we've talked a lot about jurisdiction, or a lot about people that are outside committing crimes that take place inside. I want to make sure, and I appreciate you bringing up like the sex tourism, but I want to make sure that it also applies that if there's anyone in the state that's conducting some sort of crime that may not impact anyone within the state, for instance, there's not a young lady that they're bringing into the state, they're facilitating this action taking place outside of the state, that we can still have full jurisdiction. I want to make sure that we still have the ability to stop that person, because my concern, on top of the fact that we're impacting people's lives, and I don't care if they live in the state or not, is that if they're going to do that, then that's probably not where they're going to stop, and it will eventually impact people within the state. So I just want to make sure, as we're working on that's a piece of the whole discussion.
Representative Grunberg?
Yes, you're absolutely right. The jurisdictional doctrine says you have jurisdiction over people who are in the state committing the acts, or people who are outside the state with an effect in the state. And I will have Mr. Gardner on the phone, and we may have a more lengthy legal memorandum. I have this October memorandum he referenced, but it absolutely covers people who are in the state.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I may be going down a rabbit hole here, but I'm just curious about something. So suppose somebody is soliciting in the state from one of the places in Nevada in which prostitution is legal, and they're soliciting for employees of a brothel in Nevada. Would that be illegal here, even though prostitution is legal in a portion of Nevada?
I guess I'd have to think about it in the facts of the case. I guess I wouldn't want to answer.
Mr. Chair.
Are they employees of the brothel or are they independent contractors?
Representative Grunberg, briefly, please.
I did not give the entire doctrine. If somebody is outside the state and does something like what you're saying from Nevada, that is not, there's no jurisdiction up here under the same doctrine because it's legal in Nevada. It has to be illegal in the place where the act occurred also. And that's, I will bring forth the model penal code stuff that's mentioned in the Wheat case. It's set out in the Wheat case, if you look in a footnote. But if the person's acting from outside the state and it has the effect in the state, it is not, there's no jurisdiction. If where the person commits the act, the telephoning, it's legal. So under your Nevada, it specifically covers the Nevada kind of a situation.
and it's legal and there's no jurisdiction. And you can look in the model penal code. Basically, I'd like to go where the model penal code is going in this thing.
Thank you.
Representative Pruitt.
So just continuing on that, it's a very valid rabbit hole. Thank you for that, by the way. So if, and I don't know, there is a place, let's say an international location, where it there are no restrictions on, you know, abuse of a minor or whatever it may be, that basically that we have, that we're trying to reference in here, but the person is in our country and promoting it, whether it's on the telephone, it's on the internet, whatever it is, it's in, they're in our state, and they're promoting that. It seemed to us as a crime. Maybe they're facilitating through a some sort of website people committing this act in a country where they just don't have laws against it for whatever reason. We can not do anything to that person. We cannot say that your promotion of that act that we consider illegal but they don't have a problem with. We can, okay, please.
It's only an it's only an exception if the actor is outside the state. If the actor is inside the state and it's illegal here, then of course we have jurisdiction. Person's here.
So I'm going to swap that conversation if it's okay. So then I want to, so I will confirm if they are promoting prostitution in Alaska but they are living in Nevada, we can go after them or we cannot?
We can't because it's legal in Nevada.
So if they live in another country and it's legal for them to abuse a young child in some manner because they just don't have laws against it and using the internet or the telephone, they are promoting child sex trafficking in our state, we cannot, through the means that we're trying to address here, go after that person using the State Department, etc.
My understanding of the model penal code is we cannot. But these are very technical questions, and if we're going to look at this, which I think we should, I may talk to Doug and see if we want to get somebody who's even more an expert on this, because these are all factual patterns. But my understanding is if the person's outside the state and doing something that's illegal where they are, and they don't set foot in the state, and it affects people in the state, there's no personal, no subject matter jurisdiction there. And I'll have to check, but that's what I understand.
And just to not, Representative Ledoux, go ahead.
I guess I'm just wondering, as long as we're continuing down, whether or not they would be considered to be in the state, even though they are not physically present in the state, by virtue of the fact that they've used our mails, or they've used the telephone, or they've used the internet, that one of those which is in the state, whether or not that would be enough of a, oh, what's that?
Nexus
with the state to give us jurisdiction.
Minimum contact.
Minimum contacts. Thank you. Through the chair.
I don't think so, but I want to get some experts. This is really, this is criminal law 101 and very, very important stuff. And I'm glad we're doing it.
Representative Grunberg, it was very complex, you said a little bit ago, but he said it's 101. I wonder, you know, you could have a quiz maybe for us next week, you know. And then maybe we got to get a degree, you know. House Judiciary.
I'll tell you.
We served.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg, I'm sorry. I let it.
The Bar Association gives CLE for our work on the Judiciary Committee, so lawyers can get continuing legal education. You could.
But the reason that I went down that smart remark trail was just to point out that we have very limited time left in the session, and this is a good and important bill, and we don't want to get into the weeds so far that we cannot move this bill next Wednesday, 2 days from now. So let's please not go there. Otherwise, there might be just some uncomfortable votes, and we'll just press on, but we don't want to do that. If we can do something, let's do it.
Yes, we'll. I think be very important.
Okay. Great. Any other comments? If not, we're adjourned at 2:30 till Wednesday.